If you want to establish a colony, you need engineers and architects to plan construction and deal with the inevitable problems with unskilled labour that arise. It's telling that Stirling and the first settlers left England without either on board, only meeting Henry Reveley by fortuitous accident in Cape Town. They did have a few landowners, but not enough farmers, that is, people who understood the processes of growing crops and managing livestock, rather than the property they were raised on. There were a few lawyers on board too, so if there were any property disputes in this new world with land for the taking, that could be sorted. Someone you might not think is essential, but in the first years is far more important than a lawyer, is an undertaker. Disposal of the dead needs to be managed, not only because social mores demand it, so does the health of the colony. During summer especially, the temperature rose above what most colonists had experienced and the dead needed to be buried quickly. In the early years, that was one more task given to the soldiers. The first person in the colony to advertise the undertaking of funerals was Edward Wood, who put an ad in the Perth Gazette in 1834. He was a carpenter by trade, who also happened to make mattresses. That was typical of undertakers back in Britain at the time. It wasn't a trade so much as a sideline. And in Britain, undertakers were mostly women who also worked in midwifery. So the newly born and the recently deceased were their areas of expertise. By the 1830s, men were starting to muscle in. Out here, where there were no suitable storage facilities, the undertaker's main job was to build a coffin, transport the deceased in the first years with the pallbearers, later decades, in a hearse up to the cemetery, and place them in a hole he'd employed workers to dig. It was necessary, but it still wasn't an honourable role. The undertaker was a carpenter, a tradesman, not a professional. Things began to change with greater knowledge of the processes of death, and with that more responsibilities passed on to undertakers. While embalming had been practiced for centuries, what was Egyptian mummification but one form of that? It was mostly to honour rulers or for medical or scientific purposes, to preserve a body so some features could be analysed. As people travelled more often and over greater distances, there was a growing demand for bodies to be returned home in a reasonable state. In Britain, by the 1860s, undertakers were inclined to hire out the construction of hearses and focus on preparing the body. Undertaking was becoming more a profession, though the undertaker's reputation wasn't improving. He wasn't someone you'd necessarily invite to your children's party. What's your image of the undertaker? Is he tall, gaunt, dour, and dressed in black? Time, then, to introduce Andrew Drewy Dyson, by his own reckoning, the fattest man in Perth, a drinker, a brawler, a womaniser, and an undertaker. Let's go back to January 1885, to Murray Street. Around 9:30 on a Friday night, and Police Constable Grant sees a disturbance on the street. As he hurries over, a young girl comes up and tells him her brother is upstairs killing her father. PC Grant doesn't go inside. In fact, he waits until the next morning before returning with a warrant for the girl's brother. He will tell the court that on Friday night he overheard the brother using some of the most filthy language I've ever heard. That's enough for Magistrate George Leek. We met his uncle, also named George, during the fatal duel between Clark and Johnson. He turns to the prisoner, Andrew Drewy Dyson, and says, "A man who is guilty of using such language as has been related to me is not fit to live amongst the beasts of the field. In fact, not fit to be at large. So I shall sentence you to 6 months' imprisonment with hard labour." Clearly, in 1880s Perth, using bad language in public is far worse than trying to kill your father. But in any case, the prisoner is asked for any statements. And here, we must show some respect to Andrew Dyson for his extraordinary cunning. The problem was, he unrolls his sleeve and shows a wound. He was bitten by a dog earlier in the week, and that may have affected his temper.
No doubt I had a little too much to drink and made use of language I had no business to have done. If you'll deal a little more lenient with me this time, I shall not come before the court again.
Is George Leek moved? Not in the slightest.
You have been too often before this court. What you have said will not alter the sentence I have passed upon you.
As Leek demonstrated, Dewey Dyson is no stranger to the courts, and if I were to list his appearances in the dock over the next few years, the drunken rides, the foul language, the assaults, there'd be no space to talk about his career as a cabinet maker and undertaker.
Why live miserable when you can be buried comfortably by A. Dyson? Funerals conducted in any part of the colony on the most reasonable terms and at the shortest notice at prices that defy competition. Andrew Dyson, wagon, dray, spring cart and coach factory. Nothing but seasoned York gum used. N.B. No inferior workmen kept.
No inferior workmen, perhaps, but what about management? Go forward to 1906, and Dewey Dyson, with his great girth and formidable reputation, has a contract to rebury typhoid and smallpox corpses at Karakata. The brief is particular on one detail. The bones of the dead must be interred in Jarrah boxes. The money for this contract is good enough that Dewey Dyson naturally schemes to improve on it. What if instead of Jarrah boxes, he merely repaints some old kerosene tins to look like Jarrah? What could go wrong? Well, someone else could possibly spot the difference, and they did. Though this was one more occasion when the court of public opinion found Dewey Dyson guilty of providing amusement rather than breach of contract. As Alan Thompson points out in the Ratbag Encyclopedia, his online history of his ancestors, the Dyson family, you could tell when Dewey Dyson had done well on a business contract because a week later or thereabouts, he'd be up before the courts on yet more drunken misdemeanor charges. In Perth, there's always someone to forgive you for breaking the law if you're entertaining about it. You can find Leone Leveris's history of undertaking in Perth in The Dismal Trader at the State Library, and the Dyson story online at the Ratbag Encyclopedia. In our last story, we'll hear about a thrilling escape and some unsolved mysteries at the East Perth cemeteries.